Welcome to the Kona Edge, where you'll discover what the best triathletes in the world do to give them the edge.
Happy Wednesday to you. It is hump day. I'm Brad Brown. It's good to have you with us. It is hump day as we're recording this, I might add. You might be listening to it on a Saturday, or a Sunday, or a Monday. It doesn't really matter. But as I'm speaking, it is a Wednesday here in sunny Cape Town in South Africa. I hope you are well wherever you are in your corner of the world. And of late, I've been getting a few messages on social media of people taking selfies of where they're listening to the podcast. And keep doing it. Hashtag the Kona Edge across the various platforms, whether it be on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Or if you'd like, you can tag us directly. Just search for the Kona Edge on whatever platform you hang out on. And touch base. I'd love to hear from you and see where everyone listens to these podcasts. Before we get into today's podcast, and I have to tell you, there is one of the funniest one-liners in today's show that I have ever heard on this podcast. So you'll know it when you hear it. It is fantastic. And today I catch up with Colin Cook, who shares his journey into the sport of Ironman and some of the goals and aspirations that he has still for his Ironman and triathlon career. That's all coming up in a moment. But don't forget that this episode, and a huge thank you goes out to our sponsor. It is sponsored by jackrabbit.com. They've teamed up with Hoka One One this month to give you the chance to win some shoes. We've got four pairs in all to give away throughout the month of September. We've given away two already, which means there are two pairs left. If you haven't got your name into the draw yet, you snooze, you lose, okay? The sooner you get into the draw, the better your chances of winning. We've got two more pairs to give away. We'll be doing the draw first of those two draws early next week, and then the following week we'll be doing the last. So get into that draw now. If you'd like to find out more about it and more about jackrabbit.com, all you have to do is head over to this URL. It is jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge. Alternatively, what you can do is simply text the word jackrabbit. That's one word, to 44222. That's JACKRABBIT to 44222, and I'll send you those details right back on how you can get into the draw to win those Hoka One One running shoes. And if you'd like to find out more about jackrabbit.com and what Jackrabbit does, they have they are a group of speciality running stores in your neighborhoods. Head to their website to find out exactly where a store near you is, but they've also got a very, very extensive online footprint, and they can deliver straight to your door. So go check them out. jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge is where you can get all those details. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Tri Marni Triathlon Coaching. For the past 11 years, Marni and Carl Sumbal have shared a very active lifestyle together. As long-time competitive athletes, they've achieved a number of athletic accomplishments in the sport of swimming, running, triathlon, and cycling. Over time, the athletic hobby turned into a respectable and successful business. Tri Marni Coaching and Nutrition offers effective coaching and nutrition strategies designed to help athletes achieve healthy habits and athletic excellence. Tri Marni believes in incorporating scientific research with practical ideologies and applying this information to real-world settings to help triathletes develop and excel on race day. Between them both, they have successfully finished 18 Ironman triathlons and have competed in the Ironman World Championships in Kona, Hawaii, a total of 6 times. Marni is a board-certified sport dietitian with a Master's of Science in Exercise Physiology, and Carl is an experienced retool bike specialist, former Cat 1 cyclist, and proficient bike mechanic. Between them both, they have many years of practice, education, and skills from their own athletic careers, and now apply that experience and knowledge to athletes of all fitness levels. Tri Marni offers a variety of services from daily and sport nutrition consultations, sweat testing, retool bike fits, private and group training camps, and coaching. To discover more about Tri Marni Triathlon Coaching, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. And don't forget, if you're a coach or if you have a coaching business and would like to get a plug on the podcast, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. It is bright and early where you are. You obviously used to getting up this time of the morning to sort of train, and thanks for getting up to chat to us.
Ah, my pleasure. Really excited to be on.
Connor, where in the States do we find you?
So I live in a little town called Brookline, New Hampshire. So about an hour north of Boston.
And the tri scene, pretty big there. You guys, there's a handful of triathletes that hang out with you guys.
We're working on it, yeah. So I actually founded and run the local tri club. We've got about 165 members, so it's continuing to grow, and it's been a lot of fun for sure. Great people.
Where did your sort of introduction to the sport come from? How did you get into triathlon?
So I actually played hockey in college, so I was kind of an athlete my whole life. But after college, and even to be honest, at the end of my college career, I was doing a lot of partying. And really wasn't happy with the direction my life was headed in. And so literally about, I think, 3 in the morning one time with my buddies, you know, rather intoxicated and things, I said, oh, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon this year. You know, and all my buddies laughed at me and they said, yeah, sure, sure. And, you know, I stuck with it and I did it. And kind of triathlon was the next, you know, obstacle to tackle, if you will, and never look back.
I love it. Were you, I mean, you say you played hockey, you were fairly fit. It's a different fitness to running a marathon. Did you have a bit of a running background, or was it when you sobered up, thought, how the hell am I going to do this?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of how the hell am I going to do this. But, you know, obviously there's some cross training for hockey. You know, you do some running and stuff, but nothing more than, geez, you know, a couple miles, I guess. So, you know, something that wasn't, I guess, natural to me, but picked it up pretty well.
And let me just put it out there for a lot of our international listeners. We're talking hockey as in ice hockey, not field hockey that we would
Good
play here in South Africa.
Yeah, right. No, definitely ice hockey. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Cool. And, I mean, how did that first Boston go? I mean, what was tell me a little bit about the build-up to that and how that first sort of experience of that marathon was.
It was a lot of fun. Actually, I would get myself in trouble with this, but I was planning to run it as a bandit. I didn't have a number. And, so one of my friends, actually, he had a friend, this gal that, she ended up hurting her ankle or something like that. So she wasn't gonna be able to run. So I ended up using her number. And so, there's a little town, called North Reading, Massachusetts, where I'm actually the fastest woman to complete the, Boston Marathon from there. So, you know, I ran a 3:54, I think. So, that's still my only standalone marathon I've ever done. So, that's my fastest to this point.
Well, we won't tell anyone if you won't. I love that story. I think
that's
fantastic.
Right, that's right.
Colin, tell me, I mean, the move then from running that, I mean, you obviously had a good experience. I mean, often you can have a horrible first experience of the marathon and you go, you know what, that was cool, but I never want to do that again. But that wasn't the case for you. You obviously digged it and you're back for more.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought when I was in school, one of my teachers actually did Ironman Arizona. And, you know, so that kind of put the bug in my mind, you know, whatnot. And I said, well, you know, at that point, I really couldn't even fathom doing it. But, you know, felt like maybe that would be something to tackle next or whatnot. So definitely goal oriented, and kind of when I set my mind to things, I like to do it. So it was just the next step in the evolution, you know.
And human memory tends to be quite short as well. I ran a marathon yesterday and blew up. I had the worst day of my life, and today I'm thinking about maybe I want to do an Ironman. But yeah, so it's weird like that. You're sort of steps into triathlon. Tell me how that came about. What, like and what was it like?
So I had actually signed up. I did a half Ironman that same year that I did the marathon, and I definitely had my doubts the day after the marathon. I'll tell you that. I always joke with my clients that we're not picking your next race, you know, the day after the race, because that's usually not when the confidence of the morale is super high for picking races and whatnot. But you know, as the days go on, you know, later that week, then, you know, so it's a good sign you're already thinking about it, especially after a rough day yesterday.
Yeah, it's after the fact. The day after is okay. It's during the marathon you're thinking to yourself, why am I doing this? And I questioned my sanity a few times yesterday. I can tell you that much. As far as jumping into the half, did you do sort of shorter distances, or was that it? I mean, you obviously like biting off a bit more than most can chew, but you full out. You don't nothing in half measures.
No, definitely went all out. But I mean, I did do an Olympic was my first distance race, and then I think I snuck one or two sprints in there. You know, just to kind of do some testing and whatnot, but it was all about the half for sure.
Were you pretty good? Season. Were you pretty good from the start?
Yeah, I went pretty well. I think I did 4:57 in my first, so was the one to go sub 5. Kind of was my reach goal there. You know, obviously wanted to finish, but things went pretty well and definitely really hooked me. So that was good.
I'm going to say 457, you're pretty well and my pretty well are two different things, because 457 is really good first time out. So you must have been pretty chuffed.
Yeah, it was good. I remember definitely having some cramping issues and some things I'd do definitely a lot differently if I, could do it again. But it was still a great experience.
Well, what do you think caused those cramps? I mean, knowing what you know now, what do you reckon caused those issues in that first one?
Definitely not enough fluids and salts on the bike.
Simple as that.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's cool when you can figure things out like that. And then the step up, I mean, you'd obviously had some exposure, as you mentioned, to seeing someone or knowing someone who had done a full Ironman. Tell me about the decision to go and do the big one.
Yeah, I mean, again, it was kind of, I think, always in the back of my mind where even if I wouldn't admit it to people, you know, it was something that I wanted to get done for sure. So I think it was more just kind of the timing of when I was going to do it. And I was thinking about waiting yet another season. That ended up being the next year after the Firm Man, it was called, the half Ironman I did. And it was, you know, I did Ironman Arizona, so it was towards the end of the season. So I felt like it gave me another, you know, more than a full year to train for it. So worked out pretty well, minus I actually got hit by a car on my bike about 8 weeks before the race. So even a couple of days before, I wasn't quite sure I was going to be able to do it. I tore my labrum in my left hip, which has been a problem ever since. But it worked out, and adrenaline can do a lot of good things for you.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And that first one, how did it go? Did it go according to plan? Obviously, the build-up wasn't ideal, but did you end up coming out of it, getting what you wanted out of it?
Yeah, I did. So I did a 10:40, which I think, if I was healthy, probably would have been more in the 10:15, 10:20 range or whatnot. So, again, given how skeptical I was about how things were going to go, I was thrilled with it for sure.
Colin, growing up as a kid, have you always been competitive? I mean, are you one of those kids that just hated losing and you still like that?
For sure. There's really no way to deny that. I've always been very competitive and played on some pretty successful teams when I was growing up and things. And that hasn't changed.
Do you think you need to have that as a trait if you want to be good at the sport of Ironman and race on the Big Island?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I still truly believe that the only person you should be racing against is yourself, you know, and if you want your best results, you're going to get those by, you know, following what makes sense for you. But at the same time, you know, if you don't have that drive and, you know, if you don't use those lows as motivation, you know, because you're certainly going to have lows and things that don't go well. And if, you know, if you're somebody that just is out of the hell with it, you know, when things don't go well, then you're probably not going to be, you know, as suited to be successful as people that use that again as motivation and say, all right, you know, here's what I'm going to do differently to make sure that that doesn't happen again and that I get where I want to be.
When did Kona first pop up on the radar for you?
Again, I mean, you know, once you hear about Ironman, you know, it doesn't take long to hear about Kona and that being kind of the mecca and what everybody wants to get to. So, you know, obviously I had no realistic expectations of qualifying at my first race, but, was something again with the competitiveness that, I was interested in getting there at some point.
Did you qualify in that first one or did you just?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, it took, it was my, fourth Ironman where I qualified, I believe. Yeah.
Was that the plan or were you hoping to qualify before then?
So that year I did Ironman St. George and then, so I didn't qualify there. That was one of the craziest races I've ever done. There's some crazy conditions, but, didn't qualify there. And then I did the Ironman New York City, I guess we'll call it. And, it was definitely the goal was to qualify there. And, ended up sneaking it out. Actually, it was a roll down. I was one off, but it worked out, and couldn't have been happier for sure.
Two of the big things that come out of these chats that I've had with age groupers over the years is the first one being consistency of training to get you to Kona, and the second one is patience. Often people, you want it and you want it now. Talk to me about the planning and what it takes and to sort of put that plan together in order to get to the Big Island.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's definitely about, you know, that dedication and being able to, you know, for me in New England here in the U.S., you know, we're about to hit our cold season where, you know, you're training indoors, you know, the sun's not coming out till almost 8 a.m. and things. And, you know, you're down in your dungeon training, you know, and it takes a tremendous amount of dedication. And for me and, you know, what I try to do with my athletes, though, that really can be the most important part of your season. I like to refer to that as kind of the out season where, you know, you're focusing on getting faster at shorter distances. And then, you know, we take that to going faster over longer distances once ideally the weather gets nice and, you know, race season starts coming around. So, you know, it's definitely not easy sometimes where, you'd love to sleep in and, but you know what that's, it's what it's going to take to get you where you want to be and hit your goals.
What do you think's the secret to qualifying for Kona?
I mean, I said it earlier, but I really truly believe that you got to be able to stick to your plan and not get caught up in what other people are doing. I mean, I'm definitely, the run is my strength. So, you know, I think there's been a few times where if I knew, like I've come off the bike in like 11th or 12th in my age group and still won my age group and things, you know, where if I knew that coming off the bike, you know, I'd maybe like, oh my goodness, you know, I got to run faster than I need to and not build on that, you know, and slowly, you know, progressively, you know, track people down and whatnot. So, being smart there, I think is really important. You know, obviously you got to play to your strengths and whatnot, but, my favorite line, I think, is, you know, we swim and we bike for show and we run for dough, right? So, you know, you got to be able to set yourself up to run successfully. And, that's definitely been really helpful to me.
It's so funny you say that because that's exactly what happened in my marathon yesterday. And the reason I blew up is I was running with someone and then decided, you know what, I want to catch a mate of mine who was, I knew was a fair way up the road. And instead of taking my time to try and catch him, I literally tried to do it in the space of 10Ks. And by the time I hit halfway, I was absolutely broken. And it was, it wasn't a fun second half. I can tell you that much. And that's exactly it. It's again, it boils down to that patience and knowing what you're capable of. And if you run, or if you run the perfect run, or if you finish the perfect race, if it's good enough to win on the day, then so be it. Then you've done what you needed to do. But as soon as you get caught up in that sort of chasing the hare just in front of you, you're gonna get yourself into trouble.
You nailed it. Yeah. I mean, you know, another thing I'm a big proponent of is really those first few miles, especially the Ironman, that you really got to let yourself settle into that. And, you know, there's different philosophies and strategies and whatnot where some people, you know, push that you should actually slowly digress and your pace should slow as the marathon progresses. But, you know, I'm a huge fan of you go out at the proper pace and then you should actually be able to negative split the marathon. And when you do that, you know, your confidence is just soaring because you're blowing by people that are walking, you know, and you know, your morale is just so much more higher than what it would be if you're just dying. You know, obviously you get tired either way, but, to put yourself in a position where you're thriving as opposed to, you know, looking behind you and hoping that people aren't catching you, you know, it's just a totally different mindset that I think is really powerful.
Yeah. The go until you blow strategy is not necessarily the way to go.
It works for some people, you know, every once in a while, but I haven't seen as much success with it. I'll put it that way.
Didn't work for me yesterday. I can tell you that much. Colin, talk to me about your first experience on the Big Island and sort of having set the goal and qualified and getting to race against, I mean, for most people, getting to race on the same course on the same day as the best triathletes, not just in your age group, but in the world. I mean, pros and all the other age groups. Tell me about your experience and what that's like.
Yeah, it was, you know, very, very special. You know, I'll say when I first got there, I remember I got out of the car with my bike, you know, to do a training ride. And I literally, you know, was sweating profusely and hadn't even got on my bike yet. And I literally thought to myself, I don't know if I can do this, you know, and, you know, we all aspire and don't get me wrong. I should, you know, want to go back again and we love to race there as much as we can. But you don't quite understand those conditions until you get out there and you actually experience it. Cause it's like no other place in the world that I've experienced anyways.
And so many people say that, is there any way now that you've experienced it and how can someone prepare themselves for it? You say there's almost no way, but there's got to be some way. What's What, like, if you had to go back and do things over again, would you change anything in that build-up to prepare yourself for that? What would you have done?
It's tough. I mean, I think that, you know, again, especially living in New England here, you know, it's starting to get cold now. So, you know, with Kona, you know, just about a month out, you know, the temperatures start to drop. I mean, you can't do open water. You need a wetsuit in the open water, you know, which, you know, obviously you're not going to be able to use in Kona. And you know, you're in those colder climates. I am a huge fan of using saunas for heat acclimation. So, you know, that's really the best prep I've seen, and have some things I do with my clients and whatnot to myself to prepare, you know, the best we can there. But, I think I'd be lying to you if I told you there's a way to truly emulate and get fully prepared for the island until you go out there and you actually experience it.
Do you also think it's a case of the more you do it and the more you put yourself in that situation, the better you get at dealing with that?
Definitely. I think experience too, where your mindset, and you know, once you know what to expect, and you know, the fact that, you know, you could put out, we'll call it 250 watts, you know, and you know, you're doing 30 miles an hour one way and you're doing 10 or 11 miles an hour the other direction, you know, based on the winds, and you know, to not get caught up in that, you know, and to get worried about, oh my goodness, you know, I'm doing 10 or 11 miles an hour right now, you know, I need to be going faster. You have to be able to just say, all right, you know, this is where I'm at right now, this is the pace I need to be at, you know, power effort wise, and you know, that's what's going to give you, where if you get caught up in that and you try and push through that, you're going to end up in trouble. For sure.
How easy is it to get carried away in a race like the World Champs, where you race a race like Arizona or any other Ironman around the world, where if you're good, you're at the front end of the field and there's not too many people around you, but you get to Kona and everyone's good. And you get out the water and there's a lot of people around you and you think to yourself, hang on a sec, maybe I'm a bit further back than what I am. But meantime, you're hitting your numbers. How difficult is it to hold yourself back and go, you know what? I need to race my own race. I'm not chasing anyone here but myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a challenge. I think it's actually something I've been pretty good at over the years, where a lot of people will, you know, exactly right. You know, you're used to being, you don't like being passed, you know, you don't want to be passed. And people will say, all right, you know, I'm going to go with this guy. And, you know, it just, everything you do on the island, you know, is just magnified as far as mistakes, you know, where if you do make those surges and things like that, you're going to pay for it later on. And, you know, having the discipline is just vital. You got to be able to do it. And it's easier said than done for a lot of people, but for the reasons you exactly mentioned there, but you got to do it.
And the margins for error are a lot less in those conditions. If it's temperate and mild, you could probably push a bit harder. But if you burn matches early on the big islands, you can get yourself into deep trouble.
No doubt. I mean, you know, I am a huge fan of still, even as an age grouper, you know, proper pacing and being able to work, you know, as a group, you know, and being able to ride with other people, obviously in the appropriate distances. And that can definitely make you stronger and keep you at the paces that you want to be successful and kind of motivate you. But at the same time, you got to be able to know that, all right, you know, this isn't the right pace for me. And, I got to let this guy go and things like that.
Conor, what's the biggest life lesson that Ironman has taught you?
Ah, that's a good question. You know, I think that you can do more than even what sometimes your mind, you know, thinks you can do. You know, an Ironman itself, right, is always filled with highs and lows throughout the day. And, you know, the successful people are the ones that are able to push through those lows and, you know, and strive off those highs. So, you know, you can dig deeper than you really think you can. And, you know, once you get to that point, you only kind of continue to find new levels of, you know, abilities to push yourself and whatnot. So, I think that experience, and as you continue to spend time in the sport, it just, only magnifies.
What do you know,
that translates to life, I guess, really.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you most proud of in your Ironman career?
At this point, it's still kind of keeping going and staying, you know, relatively, competitive. You know, I've got three little ones right now, a 4-year-old, 2-year-old, 1-year-old, and, we've got our fourth child coming here in December. So, you know, a lot of people will just call it quits. And don't get me wrong, I've got an absolutely amazing wife that, makes a lot of sacrifices as well for me to be able to continue to do what I do. But, you know, I like to kind of consider myself to be somebody that's kind of a role model that, keeps going, even though it's by no means easy, and it's not getting any easier. But still can live, the triathlon lifestyle despite a lot of things going on at home.
I was about to say, recovery is pretty important. If you're racing hard, how do you get any recovery in with three kids under the age of what's your oldest?
My oldest is four. He'll be five.
I was going to say, under the age of five. I mean, that's you obviously don't like sleep.
Actually, I do. I love sleep, and as much as people have a tendency to have sleep be the first thing they let go, it's kind of lame, obviously, but we're usually in bed not too long after our kids are, and I was in bed before 9 o'clock last night, and it's not uncommon for me to be to bed early. So, definitely a big fan of being efficient and planning ultimately is, I think, what has made me successful is, I have my day, led up, prepared, in advance, and things like that is huge for me because, and to be honest, there's sometimes, but my wife's not as much of a planner, and we have some challenges with that where, I've already got the whole week planned out and things, and she'd like to go jump and do things, which we clash on a little, but, that's part of life. And but if I wasn't able to plan and do, have my day planned out, I don't think I'd have the success and be able to get everything I do in.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, that having the juggle of a wife and three kids and number four on the way and a job, you're not a full-time athlete. You've got a side hustle coaching business as well. So, it's you're not good at Ironman. You're good at juggling.
Pretty much. I definitely consider myself to be pretty efficient with life and optimizing my time and things like that for sure. You got to just figure out, what makes sense, and you got to recognize when it's time to step back. And, obviously the family comes first, and I'm usually reasonably good at picking up when my wife's saying, all right, you're doing too much here. I need some extra help here and doing those kind of things. But it's definitely a juggling act, no doubt.
Is that something you've always been good at, even prior to sort of getting married and having kids? Have you always been pretty efficient and have you always been a planner? Because that's one of the questions we get asked a lot is, how do people do this? The pressures of life and earning a living and family, and then you throw not just one sport into this thing, you throw three. Is it something that you've had to learn over time, or have you just been lucky that you've pretty much had it sorted from the start?
No, I think it's definitely something I've learned over time, and you can definitely, get better at. And, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and other podcasts and things like that. And I'm always looking for ideas on, I'm not sure I like the word biohack, whatever, but, figuring out things that can help make you more efficient in your life and whatnot. And then, passing those things on to my clients or friends and things like that as well.
What do you think? I mean, if you could nail it down to one thing from a, let's use that term, biohack. I mean, what's one thing that you think you've done that has really sort of moved the needle with regards to getting your life in place and everything working the way it should be working?
I think that, nutrition is absolutely critical, not only in triathlon, obviously, but just in life as well. So, you have to make sure you're taking care of your body if you want to be able to expect it to perform, at its top level pretty much all the time, right? So definitely it was a couple of years into my triathlon career that I started working with a nutritionist that gave me some ideas. And my wife's actually quite into nutrition as well, so that's really helped as well. You have to be eating properly and, sleeping properly and doing those little things if you want to be able to stay healthy, not be getting sick all the time and ultimately perform at your best when it comes down to it with the show I'm on right now, right? We want to perform our best.
Absolutely. And again, it comes down to planning, particularly the nutrition point of view. So many people are reactive as opposed to proactive, where you plan your training, you know what you need to do this week, you've got your work structure, but so few people actually plan out what their meals are going to be for the week and having that in place, and that'll make a huge, huge difference.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we've got our little chart, up on the fridge, and usually we've got that laid out for the week and things, and definitely very helpful and, I think is paramount.
If I asked you what's for dinner on Thursday night, you probably could tell me.
If it's not my head here, maybe not. But if I went up and looked forward, I could tell you.
I love that. As far as what's left to achieve, what do you still want? I mean, if you're old and gray one day and you can't do this anymore, what would you want to have done in the sport?
Well, I did not do any full Ironmans this year, actually, for the record. I think I'm going to give it a go next year and try and get back to the island. But, you know, ultimately my lifelong goal, I would love to go sub-9, ideally in Kona. You know, that's a lofty one, I think, for sure. You know, I still, you know, haven't done that yet. I think it's definitely doable for me and in the right conditions or whatnot. But that's definitely something I'd like to do.
I mentioned you've got a coaching business as well. Are you coached? Are you self-coached?
I am coached as well. You know, I have my own coach, and you know, he's been extremely helpful to me, not only to, you know, help learn different things and tactics and stuff for ultimately for my clients, but you know, he's a family man as well, and his kids are a little bit older than mine, so I've definitely leveraged him to help me with, you know, dealing with different things that the family life brings on that, you know, I haven't experienced yet and whatnot as well.
There's obviously a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are getting going in the sport, and often people try and, because it's, let's be honest, it's not the cheapest of sports to do, so they sort of nickel and dime it, and they don't want to spend money on things they don't have to, but a lot of times the thing that gets neglected is the coaching, that they go and spend money on bikes and gear and they try and figure this out for themselves. What advice would you give to someone in that boat? Would you say, you know what, maybe hang off on the time trial bike, get yourself a coach first, and what should they look for in that coach?
Sure. So, yeah, obviously I'm a bit biased here, so, but, you know, I mean, it's starting with myself, right? You know, could I coach myself? Yes, I think I could, but I like having that outside feedback and somebody, you know, analytically looking at my training and things like that, that, you know, I'm not necessarily going to get if I'm doing it myself. So even with the knowledge I have, you know, I still feel there's a significant value in having a coach. But, you know, for somebody especially new to the sport, you know, there's just so much going on and there's so many different things that you need to consider. And a lot of times you're probably not considering them all in the right way. So, you know, if you're somebody that, you know, wants to be efficient with your time and, you know, make sure you're getting the best of it, you know, I really think it's kind of a no-brainer. And, you know, when you think, sure, there's some legitimate costs and things that are involved with it, but when you think about all the investments and things you're making in to become a triathlete, you know, especially an Ironman and the travel and the race expenses and all that stuff, it's really rather minute how much, you know, you'd be adding on for the coaching and whatnot. And, you know, hopefully it makes your experience that much more, you know, significantly from an improvement standpoint, but just also the confidence and things you have going into the race. But you know, to hit on what I would look for in a coach, I mean, I think it's definitely somebody you can relate to or, you know, understands, you know, the situations that you're going through. You know, to not get too far off here on a tangent, but, you know, I think that being an age group athlete myself is extremely helpful in being able to help other people. You know, not to knock on any professionals that coach and things, but a lot of them, you know, that's all they do, right? You know, so they don't have those other, you know, they've got sponsorships and things, but, you know, they can't fully relate to everything that we have to deal with, you know, when we have a full-time job, when we have kids and things that, that, you know, other people may not be recognizing and whatnot. So, I think that's really important.
Brilliant. Biggest mistake you've made in the sport, and what have you learned from it?
The one example that comes to mind actually was, I think the second or third time I was in Kona, I was running, I was using Cliff Blocks, so the little gummies, and I had them in my run belt, right, you know, and there was just a little pouch that they were in, right? So I'm running through the aid station and I'm dumping water on myself, and I go in and I open up my little baggie to grab my gummies, and they're all dissolved. So that was a game plan strategy that didn't go exactly how I wanted. So that's obviously a specific example, but that was the one that instantly came to my mind when you asked me that.
You've never done that again, have you?
No, they're always in a Ziploc baggie now.
I love it. Well, Colin, I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for your time today on the Kona Edge.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
And And that's it for this edition of the Cone Eds. Thank you very much to my guest, Colin Cook. Much appreciated, Colin. Loved sharing your story and look forward to finding out a little bit more about the individual disciplines. We'll save that for another time, as I said in the podcast. I'm back again tomorrow. A massive thank you once again to our sponsor, jackrabbit.com. If you'd like to win yourself a pair of Hoka One One running shoes, all you need to do is head over to jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge or simply text the word jackrabbit. That's J-A-C-K-R-A-B-B-I-T to 44222, and I'll text you those details right back. If you're in the market for running shoes or some apparel, do yourself a favor. Go check out jackrabbit.com. They have a very wide selection, wide range of sizes. They've pretty much got you covered. Go check it out. That's jackrabbit.com/Kona Edge. Until tomorrow, for myself, Brad Brown, cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.